Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
You opened up your submission by saying, I'm 30 and dying alone. And one line later, you say that you were in a relationship that ended September 2023. That is 9 months ago. You're teaching yourself something about how you see singlehood, even in very short bursts. 9 months is not a long time to be single.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a summer party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, I love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, co-hosted by the cutest girl in all the land, Miss Mango the Gooey Girl, who is also shedding like a motherfucker right now. But you know what? My whole apartment is covered in cat hair right now. Oh my God, there's so much of it. I haven't gotten a chance to like really deep clean my apartment since returning home, and listen, Mango's cat hair is like a full-time job to take care of around this place. So we've got work to do, but I just got home, like officially back in Brooklyn for the long haul, like a mere 2-3 days ago. I was in Spain, obviously, for a little over a week. And then I got home and I was here for like 2 days. And then I went off to my friend Rachel's bachelorette, which was amazing to get to reunite with some of my childhood best friends. It was like no time had passed at all. I haven't felt that like childlike whimsy in so long. And I just feel like I had the goofiest, silliest fucking weekend with them. I laughed so much. It was just what my body fucking needed, especially coming off the heels of the Spain trip where I also left like, oh my God, I feel so refreshed, so inspired, so creative. I left the Spain trip just feeling completely this renewed sense of purpose and passion. I feel like I left feeling more confident in myself. That might sound strange, but actually maybe it doesn't sound strange at all. I don't know if it sounds strange to you or not, but I left this trip just feeling really proud of myself. I think it's a like a humbling moment for me getting to meet a bunch of people that have come together because of my content and to watch all of these people become like fast friends. Like that is such like an indescribable feeling to me. That is something that fills me with purpose, being able to be a host and a facilitator for other people to make long-lasting friendships. That is like so important to me and makes me feel so just like aligned in the work that I'm doing now. So I left that trip feeling more confident in myself with like this newfound purpose and like just excited to keep finding new ways to like nourish and build upon the community that is developing because of this podcast and my YouTube videos and, you know, every other project that I work on. I'm just like excited to keep diving into that and finding new ways to connect with all of you guys, whether that is on future trips of these or, I don't know, in other ways that we're gonna community build in the next year. I think I'm learning that facilitation, hosting, community building is like a real interest of mine and also a strong suit of mine. I felt really proud of like my hosting abilities. I feel like I've just been learning and continuing to learn what works with these trips, how to best connect people and like create that space where people feel comfortable being vulnerable with each other and opening up to strangers they just met like 7 days ago. I feel like you'd be surprised how close you can get to strangers in the span of 7 days, or maybe you wouldn't be surprised at all. I feel like when I was younger and I used to go to summer camp, I would go for 2 weeks. That was like the full duration of my theater camp. You couldn't go longer. It was the whole camp was 2 weeks time. And we didn't do a show. This theater camp was like a little different than maybe how you would imagine other theater camps were. We weren't doing a show. Our final showcase of everything we did during the week was like a medley of songs. So we would act during like these musical numbers that were really just like hand selected from all of our favorite Broadway shows or like pop artists that we love. So every summer, once I started going, we did a Lady Gaga number. We would learn like Gaga choreography, you know, just silly, fun, one-off numbers that were a part of this like larger performance at the end of the 2 weeks. Almost every, this is going to mean something to like a very small percentage of the population, but to those of you that get it. But the last song that we would do every summer at camp, pretty much every summer at camp, was Light from Next to Normal. And all of us would come out on the stage one by one. We each have a solo. And like, I could not get through that song without open mouth sobbing every fucking year. And same with a lot of us. It was really like, if you were in the audience for that show, the final number, you would just witness 25 teenagers open mouth sobbing while trying to sing Light from Next Normal. Very endearing, very cute, very fast to like develop those kinds of relationships with people where you're like devastated to leave them and you're crying and you're like, oh my God, this, like, I just had the most incredible week. I just had the most incredible 2 weeks. And I am so sad to be leaving this space of people where I get to show up and be vulnerable and like really indulge in all corners of myself and get to know other people in the process. Like, it's, I don't know why I didn't put this together until literally this week post going on the Spain trip, but I saw a movie this week, this is all going to tie together, called Ghostlight. And if you get a chance to see it, I highly recommend it. I don't think it's going to be in theaters for a long time. It's a smaller, more indie movie, I guess. But it's about grief and using theater to process grief and like the kind of vulnerability and connection that theater can bring to us. That is a very generalized synopsis of what this movie is about because I don't want to give anything away to you. But I think through watching that movie, it triggered a lot of reflections in me of like how the creative theater and dance spaces that I was a part of as a kid like really helped build me into the person I am now. And like being somebody that feels so many feelings and also feels comfortable exploring those and is like, you know, just a deeply mushy-gushy person and has very much accepted that, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, that's absolutely because I was a theater kid. Are we kidding? These two things are connected. And then it occurred to me that like my passion for creating spaces where people get to explore those parts of themselves and create connection with other people through exploring like the deep and embarrassing and emotional and weird parts of themselves, my joy and interest in creating those spaces comes from my experience in theater and dance and how instrumental those spaces were to me when I was a kid. And I was like, why didn't you put this together? I don't know. I guess in my head, like, I knew both things were true. I knew that I loved hosting and facilitating and bringing people together and, you know, setting people up on like, you know, playing friend God basically, and, you know, bringing a bunch of people together and be like, okay, and now be friends and like creating spaces where that's possible. I knew that I loved that. I don't think I realized how deeply connected it is to my love of like the arts and theater and what those spaces did for me as I was a kid. So anyways, all of that to say, I feel like this Spain trip just, it felt so good in my body. I felt so proud of like the space that I had worked on curating. I felt like so proud to know all of the people that showed up on that trip, like what a gift it is to get to connect with you guys in that way and just get to bear witness to so many incredible connections forming. But this has gotten me thinking, like, what other ways can I facilitate community and really nourish the like connective aspect of this beyond just you guys consuming my content. Like I do really want to find more ways to celebrate the community that we have built over on this little corner of the internet beyond just the yearly Lover Girls retreats, which, yes, I do plan on continuing to do. I'm not promising I'm doing it every year. I don't know how I'll feel year after year, but yes, I am going to do another one next summer, which I'll talk more about that in a second. I don't have any details yet, but we got to brainstorm a little bit here. But beyond just the trips, I've been thinking about other ways that I could facilitate community. Totally open-minded to any suggestions or desires that you guys have in, you know, the process of me discovering what this could look like. But I'm thinking that I am going to start a Patreon community pretty soon. And the like base tier of this Patreon community is going to be like some type of Geneva or Discord group, so that there actually is like a dedicated space for connecting with other members of Lover Girls worldwide and, you know, making some besties right now, whether you're coming on these trips and actually experiencing like the, you know, the summer camp of it all, or if you're just a member of this community on the day to day and want to feel more, you know, enveloped in all of it, to have more opportunities to actually connect with other like-minded people and make friends. That's definitely a huge priority of mine. Obviously, I think the Patreon has room for so many other things on it, and I've got to brainstorm what that's going to look like. Would love to hear any recommendations that you guys might have in that regard, but the like group chat, the Lover Girls group chat is definitely happening. That is on the table. That'll be like the first entry level of the Patreon will be the Lover Girls group chat. Or I don't know exactly what the tiers are going to be, or if I'm going to do tiers. Maybe it'll just be one tier for everything. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to figure it out as we go here, but would love your guys' feedback on that. Let me know what you want. What would you like? What do you wish existed? Like, what is it that I can do to make this a more fun and community-filled space for you? Let me know. Second order of business. Next year's Lover Girls retreat. I have two destinations in mind, and I haven't decided which I think would be best for us yet. We've done surveys in the past where I've seen, you know, the list of places that you guys are interested in going to. So these two locations are very much in alignment with the overwhelming feedback that I've gotten from you guys on what type of travel you're interested in. And thank God it's the same type of travel that I'm interested in, because I'm a very, I'm a more relaxed girl when I travel. You will not see me on a hike or zip lining or doing any crazy shit like that. I am someone that likes to indulge in a new location via food, wine, and like cultural activities. Looking at beautiful places. I need to be able to go swimming if we're going in the summer. I need to be by a body of water, in a body of water, on a body of water. Okay. So to start, I knew that I wanted to go to a coastal city or an island of some kind. The two locations that I have narrowed it down to as of right now, Bodrum, Turkey, and Crete, Greece. Now, I need you guys to really think about this before giving me your answer. I feel like Greece and Crete is a very popular, very trendy destination. Turkey, I feel like, at least in the States, I hear about it less. However, it is another incredibly beautiful destination. I keep looking up photos and am just like totally enamored. So I am very interested in both of these locations, whether it's Turkey or Greece. Obviously, I went to Greece last summer, but we did Athens and Mykonos. So totally different area. This would be the island of Crete. And the main difference between these two trips, the activities are going to be similar. I know in Turkey, it's like there's a vineyard visit and a sailing day and a pottery class. We're visiting a bunch of historic spots. One of the seven wonders of the ancient world is in Bodrum. Stuff like that. Crete, very similar. Wine tour, sunset cruise. There's a waterfall visit, a jeep safari that we do, some historic stuff there as well. Lots of beaches, lots of food. Similar-ish itineraries between the both of them. The main difference is that in Bodrum, we stay in one place. We're in Bodrum the entire time. Versus Crete, we are moving. So we have three spots on Crete that we stay at. Granted, Crete is a relatively small island, so it's not like it's going to take forever to go from one spot to the next. I believe there's like an hour and a half dedicated to traveling from one spot to the next within Crete. So I think it's like 2 days, 2 days, 3 days. It's a 7 day trip for both of them. Both of them are going to be a similar price, and we're looking at next summer, June, July time. So I don't have any other details for you right now because none of this is finalized, but this is what we're working on. I'm trying to gauge here simply your interest in both of these locations, which piques your interest more. I feel completely split on the two, to be totally honest with you. They both seem quite beautiful. I would love to travel to both of them. They're both on my destination list. But I will leave this up to you. Let me know what you're thinking, what you're feeling. And I will come back to you when I have more information. A trip will be launching probably later in July, early August. Okay? Think on that. Simmer on that. Working on getting that queued up for you guys. And like excited to do this again next summer. Excited to continue finding ways to bring this community together, whether it's in person or online, and just yeah, really letting myself enjoy the art of facilitation and hosting and bringing people together and like, I don't know, really embracing where this joy of mine came from and like giving back what was given to me. Trying to create these spaces in adulthood as well, because so often these spaces do not exist in adulthood. Do you know how many times I have like cursed at the wind that there's not enough like recreational like theater and dance opportunities? Finding my dance studio was such a godsend, but for so long before that I was like, why are there not like these creative, fun, accepting spaces as an adult where I'm not expected to be like competitive or the best at something, that I just get to show up and be my vulnerable self and like indulge in the joy of movement and creating and just, I don't know, getting to celebrate that part of yourself. And realizing how deeply connected my love of the arts and the spaces that I was in creative communities as a kid, realizing how those spaces have influenced my like love of facilitating, hosting, creating these open, vulnerable spaces as an adult was just like, it was a moment where I had like a real click. Everything came into place with me, and I'm excited to keep doing it and keep learning what works best and just figuring it out with all of you guys. So what a great way to start off my summer. Spain was incredible. Can't wait to do it again somewhere next year. We'll see. Let me know what you're thinking, both in the destinations and also with the Patreon and other community building stuff that I could do. I'm very open-minded. Let me know what you're thinking, what you're feeling. Hit me with your ideas in the comments and my DMs, whatever you'd like. I will be keeping an eye out. All right, let's get into these submissions, shall we? Every time I drink a poppy, I feel like I'm waiting for someone to be like, don't you know that it's all bullshit? And I'm like, did you think I was drinking poppy because I thought it was going to fix my gut health? Like, I wasn't, and I'm still going to drink it because I don't care what it does or doesn't do because it tastes good. Maybe like they should fix that on another cup. From a brand perspective, they should for sure fix their marketing and do better and all of that. From a consumer perspective, I don't give a fuck. I drank it because it tasted good, not because I thought that it was some magic soda. I'm like, listen, I got a Diet Coke problem. This is what y'all should understand. I am a DC fiend, okay? So if I can break up my Diet Coke and caffeine consumption with something else, I'm going to do it. It has nothing to do with the gut health stuff for me and really never has. But Godspeed. And they shouldn't have deceived us. But I also don't care. I'm just being honest and vulnerable with you right now. I don't give a fuck if everyone at Poppy lied to me. It tastes good. Anyways, these submissions, let's get into them. There's so many good ones. I was sitting at my desk going through the box earlier, just like talking to myself the whole time. Like, what am I doing? Let me get on this mic and talk through some of these. So Let's go. Hi, Maddie. As a fellow bisexual and in honor of Pride Month, I wanted to get your take on this. I was recently listening to another podcast where a bi girl wrote in and said that she is happily in a relationship with a man who she thinks that she will marry slash be with forever. She said she has never been with a woman, and since she is with her current male partner, doesn't anticipate that she ever will be. She asked the hosts if she should still come out to people in her life, even though she will probably never be in a same-sex relationship. The hosts came to the consensus that since it will probably never be relevant to her life, that she doesn't need to come out if she doesn't want to. I find myself basically in the same situation. I've been in a relationship with my boyfriend for almost 3 years, and we are both confident that we will get married and stay together for the long haul. I've known I'm bi for probably 6 or 7 years at this point, but I've only come out to close friends. My family doesn't know, and it's not really something I declare super publicly because it doesn't really feel like anyone else's business but my own. But sometimes I feel ashamed about it, like I'm taking the easy way out by not coming out to everyone. I would love to hear your thoughts on this as someone that wasn't explicit about their queerness until recently. Is it dishonest to not disclose your queerness to someone if it's truly not relevant to your relationship? Much love to you and Miss Mango. I don't believe that being private equates to being dishonest. I think that you can tell anyone you want to tell, and you don't have to tell anyone that you don't want to tell. I don't think that you should feel a pressure to say more than you want to say or to be more public than you want to be. Some people are just more private. Clearly, I know nothing about that, so I won't claim to understand that. But some people are just more private. Just because you might be a more private person doesn't mean that you're being dishonest. You know, if you only want to share your sexuality with your closest friends because that's what makes you feel comfortable, then that's totally fine. I don't think you have to feel guilty about that in any way. However, if you want to tell more people, I think that you should feel totally comfortable doing that regardless of if you're in a relationship with a man or not. If you are a bisexual person in a relationship with a man and you think you're going to marry this man and you'll never actually date a woman, that doesn't make you less of a bisexual person. Your sexuality is not who you're dating. Your sexuality is who you are attracted to. So whether or not you're in a relationship with a man doesn't take away that part of you. So I wouldn't feel bad about like taking up space and saying that you are bisexual and talking about that openly if that's what you want to do. But if it's not what you want to do, I don't think you should feel pressure to do that, right? Like, I feel like if I wasn't a public figure, if I wasn't making content, I don't know that people outside of my circle would know. You know what I mean? And that's just because I'm like, well, who gives a fuck if this random person that I went to college with and otherwise don't speak with knows what my sexuality is? Like, does it matter at all if those people don't know? You know, like if I wasn't a public figure, I'd probably be in the same boat as you. My close friends would be the ones that know, and other people probably wouldn't know. And I think that's probably normal, right? You don't have to tell anyone you don't want to tell. You don't have to be extremely public about any parts of your intimate life if you do not want to be. You can be as private or not private as you choose to be. My only hope for you would be that the reasons why you're choosing to be more private don't connect to you feeling like you can't claim bisexuality because you're in a relationship with a man currently and you see yourself with him long term. You know, I would hope that the reasons why you're choosing not to talk about it is because you just feel more comfortable being a private person and you feel like the people who need to know and you feel comfortable with all of that versus you're not saying it because you feel like you're not allowed to or shouldn't take up that space because you're in a relationship with a man. I would push back on that and say that I think regardless of who you are currently dating, your sexuality is not who you're dating. Your sexuality is who you are attracted to, what you feel. It's so much more than just who you are currently in a relationship. It's a part of you. I think that you can come out at any point in life, whether you are fucking married to a man, never planning on dating again in your life or not. There's no like timeline on when that becomes something you can talk about versus something that you can't. So I don't think you need to feel bad about being private. I also do not think that being private equates to being dishonest. However, if you want, oh my God, do you see Mango? She's like pushing me, shoving her head into my armpit.
Yes.
You don't need to feel bad about coming out and talking about your bisexuality just because you're in a relationship with a man. Right? So these things can both exist at the same time. And I just hope that your reasons for being private aren't because you feel like there's not space for you within that larger conversation of bisexuality, because there is.
Hey, Maddie, I've been listening to your podcast for about a year now, and I really respect your perspective on a wide range of subjects. I'm currently at a crossroads with someone I met on Hinge. We've had numerous conversations and intend to start dating and seeing each other in person, but we haven't met yet. I'm usually open-minded and willing to give people the benefit of the doubt. However, I recently discovered that her political beliefs are the polar opposite of mine. This has been a struggle for me, especially given the number of people she follows who are aligned with a certain political figure. For some context, she's a straight, cisgender, plus-size woman who follows many members of the Trump family. We've never talked politics before. In contrast, I'm a straight-sized, black, pansexual man who supports Biden. Despite our political differences, everything else is perfect between us. I constantly shower her with love and affection, making sure she knows how much I value her. Do you think it's possible to date someone with such different political views, especially considering how polarized both parties are and the division they create? I'm recently back in Texas from Michigan, where I attend university. I would greatly appreciate your advice on this matter. Thank you again for your insights.
Well, I think that everybody listening to this podcast knows what my answer is going to be. So I'll just get right into the meat and juice here and tell you no, I do not think that's possible. I personally, for myself, cannot envision a world where I could ever love someone with opposing political beliefs to me. It's one thing to have the same core beliefs, but maybe differ on what you think the best path forward is. But at that point, you're not opposing beliefs, right? You have the same beliefs, but they differ in varying ways. And you can have conversations with each other where you know your hearts are in the same place. You have the same core, the same foundation, and you can talk about, you know, the nuances of those things. That's one thing. But to have opposing political beliefs with someone, yeah, I could never, I would never. It would feel like I was going against my own belief system to date someone like that. For starters, I'm just not attracted to people that don't give a fuck about other living people in this country. I mean, listen, I am not someone that is a fan of any politician. I think the conservatives in this country are out of their fucking mind. There's a national abortion ban still on the table, something that would have violent and devastating consequences to so many people in this country, particularly poor communities, low-income communities. Similarly, seeing how the Biden administration has handled the genocide happening in Gaza is so fucking maddening. Think that all of these people are evil and corrupt. However, looking at people that support Donald Trump, that love Donald Trump and the Trump family and are just like deep in all of that, we have like a fundamental difference at our core that would make me dislike you even on like a human friendship acquaintance level. To be close to someone that has such a violent disregard for other living human beings, whether they are people in this country or not in this country, to be so discriminatory and hateful towards other living people is horrific and is something that I do not take lightly. I don't even want to know these people in an acquaintance way, never mind a romantic relationship way. If you align yourself, if your belief system is in alignment with those people, you and I have fucking nothing in common. There is no way in hell that I would ever be romantically interested in someone that has a heart that's that fucking rotted from the inside out, because that's how I see them. There's no room for exception. There's no wiggle room. Those people are like violently evil and have like an insane disregard for other people that I cannot tolerate. So to me, there is no dating someone that has opposing political beliefs to me. I could date someone that has the same political beliefs to me with like some difference in opinion for the best path forward, like I said, but to have opposing political beliefs is something that I have absolutely no room for. And it goes beyond just like, yes, this is my heart and my core and what I believe, how I believe that we should be treating other people. But it's also like a safety thing, right? Like, I thought about this a lot, especially when I was in high school, because I have a trans sibling. And my sibling transitioned, it was like 2012, 2013. So this is a long time ago at this point. And that was something I thought about a lot in like the early stages of my brother's transition, because I was like, you know, I always cared about the type of people that I was becoming friends with and becoming close with, having crushes on. You know, I always gave a shit about who those people were and what they believed in and what they valued. But having someone so close to me be within a very vulnerable community upped the stakes, right? And it became a matter of like, I need to make sure with 100% certainty that everyone entering my life, whether it is a friend or someone I'm dating or whoever, everyone coming close to me that will inevitably become close to my brother, I have to make sure that those people give a fuck about him the same way that I give a fuck about him. I would never in my fucking life bring someone to my family's house, bring them close to my brother, if I thought that they wouldn't respect him, love him, and fight like hell for him the same way that I would. You do not get near me if you don't love my people the same way that I love my people. To date someone that couldn't love my brother the same way that I love him would bring out a violent version of me, right? Because I don't tolerate that. If you're dating me, if you're friends with me, if you are in my life in any way, you have to be with the shit, okay? And you have to be protective of the people that I love the same way that I am, or I have no space for you in my life. I feel protective of the people that I love. I feel protective of my siblings, of my friends, to bring someone into their lives that could be a danger to them would kill me. I don't want to open any doors to people that I love that could potentially hurt them or make them feel less respected or less safe, and as a result, feel less respected and less safe around me. I want the people in my life to know that even if I am not within the group of people that's being, you know, targeted or that is like feeling the consequences of the hate that these politicians are spewing, even if I'm not on the receiving end of that personally, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't have to impact me personally for it to impact me. You know what I mean? And I would never want people in my life to see me align myself with people like that, because that's not what I believe. And I care about the people I love's safety and them feeling good and respected and loved above most other things in this fucking world. And I could not date someone with opposing political beliefs to me, because I think they're fucking dumb. I think they're hateful. And I think they are a danger to the people that I love that exist in more vulnerable positions in society than I do. That's where it starts and ends for me. I don't have room in my life for bigots. And that's sort of that. So I'm sure there are some people out there that can date people with opposing political beliefs to them. That would make me really question how much they actually cared about the things they claimed to care about, though. To me, it would seem like being flimsy in your beliefs if you were saying one thing and then dating someone who said another thing. Because it's like how that a relationship is very emotionally intimate. To have differing core beliefs in that way, to me, would just say that you were flimsy in your own core beliefs and that you could be swayed to believing something different. To me, it just is very simple. And hateful people are not people that I want to align myself with. And if I witnessed someone aligning themselves with someone so blatantly hateful, I would really question their integrity as a person. I mean, I have. I knew a few people in college that dated people that were very obviously, publicly, some of them not so public, some of them secret Trump supporters. And it changed my entire perspective on those people, knowing that they stayed in those relationships with those hateful ass people. It's a wonder why I'm not friends with anybody like that anymore. I just don't think, I think it's flimsy, and it's a lack of integrity that I find a little off-putting. So that's my take. And I believe that sticking to your beliefs and what you know in your heart is right, and finding someone that mirrors that, that you think reflects the heart you hope to see in the world, is something that will serve you better. I'm 30 and dying alone. Help me. Hi, Maddie. Please read this and help me. As I approach my 30s, I find myself increasingly insecure about not being in a relationship. I'm turning 30 soon and struggling with feelings of inadequacy and loneliness. I was in a relationship that ended in September 2023. I have been going to therapy and working on myself, but it's just so hard. I would appreciate your guidance on how to navigate this stage of life. Whether it's advice on how to find a fulfilling relationship or how to become more comfortable and confident while being single, I want to learn how to not let my lack of a partner define my self-worth and to feel secure in myself regardless of my relationship status. I'm not tragic looking. Men do hit on me, but I also find that men would rather just sleep with me than actually be with me. Maybe it's just the culture these days. No one really wants to settle down anymore. Any insight or tips you can provide would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, girl. First of all, you need to change the way you're speaking to yourself about this. The way we speak to ourselves, the stories we tell ourselves, greatly influence the way we feel about certain subjects and the way we feel towards ourselves. You opened up your submission by saying, I'm 30 and dying alone. And one line later, you say that you were in a relationship that ended September 2023. That is 9 months ago. You've been single for less than a year. How did we jump from being single for 9 months to saying, I'm 30 and dying alone? Seems like a pretty huge jump. And I get you're joking around here. I get it, hear it. I think that sometimes, even when we're joking and we say things like that, we internalize that a little bit. Where you're right now when you're saying I'm 30 and dying alone because you've been single for 9 months, you're teaching yourself something about how you see singlehood, even in very short bursts. 9 months is not a long time to be single. 1 year is not a long time to be single. 2 years is not a long time to be single. You have to remember who you're bringing this question to, all right? I've been very open about my dating experiences on the internet. I've talked a lot about dating in my 20s in New York City and what that's been like for me. But I've never been someone's girlfriend. I have dated a lot of people. I've gone on lots of dates. I've been in a lot of short-term flings and situationships and, you know, things that make me not entirely single, but not entirely not single either. I've never been someone's girlfriend. I've never been in a long-term committed relationship. So you're asking advice about singlehood from someone who is very comfortable with being single. I would rather be single for the rest of my life than settle for the wrong person for me. And I see singlehood as a really beautiful and strengthening thing. And I see my extended singlehood in my 20s as being the door that has allowed me to become so emotionally intimate with myself and to be a more emotionally mature partner for whoever I do end up with when I do find the right person. You guys know I'm so excited for when I meet the right person for me and I find something that works. I'm very open-minded. I put myself out there. You know, I am like as hopeful as they come when it comes to love. But I'm also someone who loves my singlehood. I think that it's allowed me to really get close to what it is that I want, to really prioritize my own feelings and get to know them on a deeper level. I think that my singlehood has just been like instrumental in my emotional growth and is something that will make me a better partner when I do find the right person for me. Because here's the thing. I think that every single person needs to be good at being alone. I think if you're not good at being alone, that's something worth working on, whether you're in a relationship or not, because I just think it benefits everyone to have a baseline level of comfort with being alone, right? I don't think that like, and I also don't think that you can't learn about solitude within a relationship. I think you can learn and improve solitude while in a relationship as well, right? But I think that like honing in on your ability to be alone and your ability to enjoy solitude is important both in a relationship and outside of a relationship. And obviously singlehood is like the easiest way to get better at solitude, but I think you can get good at solitude within a relationship as well. Maybe just a little bit harder, requires a lot more boundaries, right? But I think it's an important skill to learn nonetheless. And that's why I always say, I think prolonged periods of solitude are important for people because I think it's a space of learning and growth that some people avoid at all costs because they're afraid of being alone. They're afraid of being single. Some people look at being single as like the worst thing ever when really it's like such a gift and people are afraid of it because of what they will assume about themselves if they are single. But the solution there is not to fill up all the quiet space, fill up all of your solitude with other people so you never have to look at yourself and look at the insecurities you have, the negative beliefs you hold about yourself that come to the forefront when you don't have anybody actively pursuing you and desiring you. At some point, you have to confront those things. And if you don't confront those things, they do come up later on while you're in a relationship. So I just think it's so important to be good at solitude, to be good at being alone, because if you're not, I just think you are more prone to settling out of fear of being alone. We cannot have a fear of solitude and being alone. This will have negative impacts on us for sure, right? And again, I do think that being good at solitude is something you can learn within a relationship as well. The same way I think that a lot of like interpersonal conflict and relationship things that you learn within a relationship, you can also learn within other relationships. I am someone that just totally doesn't buy into like the hierarchy or like emphasis on romantic relationships above everything else. I think that the like emotional learning that we do within romantic relationships, we also do in other types of intimate, vulnerable relationships if you're willing to get there with non-romantic partners. The same way I think that we can get good at solitude and being alone while in partnerships and deep, vulnerable connections, romantic, non-romantic, whatever. These things are not like, we don't section ourselves off from these things. We have the ability to indulge in all of them regardless if you are willing to do the work and like discover what that means in your life, right? Going back to what I said at first about you needing to be more mindful of how you're speaking to yourself, even at the end of all of this, when you say, I want to learn how to not let my lack of a partner define my self-worth and to feel secure in myself regardless of my relationship status. I'm not tragic looking. Men do hit on me. What does that have to do with anything? Even if you were a worm and men didn't hit on you, I don't know how that would impact any of this. Even then, it feels like the reason why you're saying that to me is because you have internalized something about what being single must mean, that you have to reassure yourself. Like, I'm not hideous. Men like me. I'm not like the worst, as if being single means that there's like something wrong with you when it doesn't. And there's not. So I would be aware of how you're speaking to yourself and what stories you're telling yourself about your singlehood and what it means for you to be single. Because I think that the way we speak to ourselves about these things really fucking matters. If I were you, I would really focus on just trying to be single for this next little bit because I think you will greatly benefit from it. And unfortunately, I can't give you like a how-to step guide on how to get comfortable being alone. It's something you just have to do, that you just have to live through. And over time, you can start challenging yourself to do things by yourself, right? Take a solo trip, go out to dinner by yourself, go shopping by yourself, go to a coffee shop, do things by yourself. Those things are nice challenges, right? But half the time, you don't really have to do anything besides exist in your solitude and not rush out of it. To just sit in your solitude, to sit in there and accept it without trying to fill that space with a new partner, to just do nothing. You don't really have to do much. You just have to not go after the next person to fill that space. And I think you learn a lot from not letting yourself jump to fill that space. I think it's important. And you being in therapy is a great thing. I think digging in therapy to why you associate so much of your self-worth to a relationship is important. What have you gone through in your life? What, you know, stories have you told yourself since you were a teenager? These are things that I have had to unpack in therapy, because for so long I felt similarly, where I had been telling myself stories since I was a kid. And it was always like, you know, when I was a teenager and I had bad body image, I always used to say to myself that like I would have good body image once someone liked me. Once someone loved me and someone proved to me that I was lovable, then I would love myself. This was a story I told myself when I was like 13, 14 years old. And then I got older and I started questioning and pushing back and I went to therapy. And it's like you have to undo all of these mindsets and ways that you've spoken to yourself and things that you've believed for a lot of your life, things that you learned through observing adults, through media, through, you know, negative experiences that you've had in dating where someone made you feel unlovable. You've got to work through all of that because it contributes to your aversion to singlehood and why you think that being single for 9 months equates to dying alone. Okay. It's hard. I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard as fuck, right? To unpack these things and to sit in that silence, in that solitude, to just accept being alone and not try to change it. It's fucking hard. But I think that you'll benefit greatly from it. And I'm sorry if my response was a bit sharp at times. It's just because this is something I'm very passionate about. And I try to make sure my points come back succinctly. But please know that I understand how you're feeling. And that I have thought poorly of my singlehood at points in my life as well. Okay. And unfortunately, there's not much you can do besides sitting in it and letting it exist and over time challenging yourself to do more things by yourself, become comfortable with more kinds of solitude, and really digging into where your aversion to singlehood or where your negative opinions on yourself while single come from. And perhaps learning that you are lovable. You are loved, you are loving, you are lovable, even when you are not actively being pursued by another person. We have so much fucking Love Island to catch up on because I was behind during last week's episode, and last week's episode was literally filmed like 2 weeks ago at this point. I have so much to talk about. It's not even funny, you guys. And thank God we're here today to get into it and do it all. And hopefully I am really succinct about this because I am going to see Kinds of Kindness in an hour and 50 minutes, which means I need to be sat in the theater in an hour and 20 minutes, which means I need to leave my house in like 40 minutes. Capiche? All right, so where we left off, Omar and Mimi have to choose to either couple up with each other or steal someone from another couple. They end up choosing Ayo and Uma for each other respectively. So as a result, no one ends up getting dumped from the villa because Ayo and Uma were in a couple together. So Uma is a little taken off guard by this because she's like, I thought Ayo was all for me, and he's been making it out to me like Mimi's more of an afterthought and I'm sort of like the main thing here that he's choosing to go towards. But Mimi's not going to make that choice off nothing. So clearly to Mimi, Ayo's been making it seem like
there's something deeper there. So Uma and Mimi sit down and call out Ayo, and basically being like, you've been acting like you're only here for Uma, while also telling Mimi that you're super into her. So Uma and Mimi call out Ayo, and the whole thing basically gets squashed really easily, which I thought it got squashed a little too easily, because he really was saying two different things to the both of them. He was sort of having his cake and eating it too. And then later on, after they call out Ayo, the girls are all hanging out, and Mimi says, and Uma's in this little chat with a bunch of the girls, Mimi says that Ayo said to her that if he got to choose in the recoupling, the one that Uma chose Ayo in, that he would have chosen Mimi and not Uma. And Uma was like, come on, why didn't you say that in front of him? Like, why didn't you just call him out for blatantly lying? Why are you saying that now rather than right in front of him? Which really, she should have brought it up. He should have gotten, like, I was also put off by how easy that interaction went, where they were just like, all right, and it's sorted. Like, no, it's not sorted. He's been, like, really singing two different stories to the both of you. And, yeah, definitely not everything was said that needed to be said. Ayo, for sure, a bit of a liar. Then, later that night, as if it couldn't get worse here, Ayo kisses Mimi in bed that night. And Uma is upset by this because she feels like she really looked out for the two of them and they didn't think about her feelings at all, which I don't entirely agree with, but I also think that Ayo should just remain the villain here and that both girls should remain innocent. Then the next day, Mimi and Ayo end up kissing again on the terrace. This information gets back to Uma, and Uma was basically told that the reason why Ayo thought it was fine and, like, cool to continue kissing Mimi is because he had already kissed Mimi before Uma showed up, which is, like, a lame storyline, because the agreement was that when he started seeing Uma, that Uma wasn't, like, the side piece that he was just, like, also seeing while he's fully making out with Mimi. It was like, no, I'm exploring it with her now, and if you're going to be respectful, you really should withhold kissing until you have chosen which girl you want to be with, which the men in this villa clearly have not thought about that a part of it at all this season. In conversation with Jess, Ronnie really makes it seem like he's leaning more towards her, but it's impossible to know if that's the truth or not, because he sort of seems that way in most of his conversations. So, naturally, Harriet and Jess start talking about this, and Harriet tells Jess that Ronnie's been eye-fucking her the whole day, and that he said he was thinking about her in bed last night. And Jess is like, well, we kissed in bed last night, and they're both sort of realizing that he's playing them. He's telling Harriet that he's in bed thinking about her, meanwhile leaving out the fact that he was getting a little frisky with Jess the night before. Sort of, he's such a loser. He's such an incredible loser. I actually cannot understand what these women see in him, because he's just the world's biggest fucking loser. He's a demon. Ronnie is a demon. Jess calls him out, and this was lame, but Jess was basically like, I don't believe Harriet. I believe you. But why is she saying that you said that? And Ronnie's like, I don't know. She's crazy. I don't know why she's saying that I, you know, said I was thinking about her in bed last night. That's really wild. Jess, first of all, why are we believing Ronnie? Why are we giving this man the benefit of the doubt? What benefit would Harriet have to lie about this? But also, Ronnie, why are you doubling down? Harriet's not a liar. Why are you calling her crazy? You did say that. You did point blank say that to her. She's not crazy. You're crazy. You're the crazy one. Yeah, he's a fucking dog is what he is. Munveer, my sexy innocent king. It is criminal that nobody is in the villa for Munveer, because he's literally done nothing. Done nothing wrong. Just been sexy and nice. Thank God for Munveer. Then basically, Jess had given Ronnie a deadline. I don't know if I mentioned this in the last episode, but basically Jess was like saying that Ronnie needed to decide if he wanted to be with Jess or Harriet before he was like making out again, because the last time he did that, Jess was like, if you do that again, consider it the last time you and I ever speak. You know, we're gonna figure this out, you're gonna figure it out, make it just a decision here, and then we can proceed. So Ronnie's deadline day is here.
Jess and Ronnie talk, and Ronnie's like, I'm so sure about you, but I'm still deciding. And she's like, so you're not that sure about me if you're still deciding. What the fuck Jess sees in Ronnie, I don't know. He's so clearly wishy-washy about all of this and taking advantage of both of them. And like, I get that sometimes it's hard to fathom how someone could be so like casually cruel and indifferent and just like, I don't know, totally disregarding your feelings right now, but believe it, babe, because it's happening and Ronnie's the type, okay? Ronnie is the one to behave like that. So let's be vigilant here, shall we? But then there's been a public vote. The public have been voting, and the couples up for elimination are Sean and Harriet, Uma and Omar, and Patsy and Manveer. The Safe Islanders are choosing who goes home. The girls choose one boy to leave, and the boys choose one girl to leave. The girls dump Manveer, my fucking king. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you for sending home the one decent man in that whole fucking place? Okay? That was lame. That was lame as shit. So I was pissed about that. And then the boys dump Patsy, which makes more sense to me, but still sucks for her. Manveer being chosen to go home was mental to me because I'm like, okay, for the sake of drama or like who has a present connection, then like, fine, I get it. But Manveer was just like a sweetie heart. Does nobody care about sweetie hearts anymore? There's a recoupling that happens. After the recoupling, we've got Nicole and Kieran, Jess and Sean. This recoupling is when Jess takes herself out of the equation with Ronnie, where she's basically like, you know what, Ronnie, like if I'm not your first choice, I'm your last choice. See you later. I'm taking myself out of the equation. She chooses Sean to couple up with instead of Ronnie, which is good. Good for her. I don't necessarily agree with all of the choices that she's made. However, I think that Jess has her head screwed on maybe a little bit tighter than most other people in the villa do. Like, she is still making a lot of exceptions for Ronnie, which I think are wild, but she at least has her wits enough about her to like say when enough is enough and walk away from something without having to like see it all the way through. You know, when it's very clear which direction it's heading and that he is like fully playing them and taking advantage of their kindness. Other couples from the recoupling, Uma and Omar, Harriet and Ronnie, Mimi and Io, and Samantha and Joey. First night after all of this, guess who's making out in bed? None other than Harriet and Ronnie. First of all, Ronnie, karma's coming for you, bitch. Karma's coming for you so intensely, you're not even gonna know it's gonna fucking hit you, okay? And Harriet, are we not seeing the signs? Are we not seeing how Ronnie's treating people? You know that he was doing all that with Jess just a few days before, and now he's magically jumped to you. I cannot stand these people on these dating shows and in real life when people do this, who think that like they are better than other people. And so they see this man that they are with or cheating with. I think this happens a lot where they are like cheating with someone and they perceive themselves to be better than the main girl. So like, he would never do that to me because I'm the prize. He's cheating with me. He'll never cheat on me. And it's like, how many times does this need to happen for y'all to get through your thick skull that you are not special, nor are you better than the other woman? Just because he's going to cheat with you doesn't mean he won't cheat on you, babe. You're next. You are not safe. You are not better than her. He's going to treat you like shit too. You are not the exception. Never believe that you're the exception with a man like that. That is so angering to me. And Harriet clearly believes that she is the exception to Ronnie's assholery, and it's just not going to work like that. Then we've got some new Islanders, three new Islanders. We've got Grace, Will, and Tiffany. Joey has a history with Grace. They had like some whirlwind holiday romance with each other in Ibiza a few years ago. And basically the reason why it didn't work out was because of long distance. I think it was that they were in two different places and neither one of them really wanted to go to the other. And they were both really busy. And it was just like, I don't know, complications of long distance and wanting different things out of life, having different priorities at that given time. So now that Grace is in the villa, Joey definitely wants to get to know her again, see if that spark is still there. And Joey assures Samantha that he will communicate with her as far as Grace goes and that he won't behave the same way that Ronnie has been. Big promises you're making there, Joe. Huge promises even. Can you keep it? We'll see about that, sir. We will see about that. Meanwhile, they do a drinking dare game to welcome in the new Islanders, in which we learn that Tiffany is clearly into Ronnie, which is such a fucking mistake. Why? Like, literally, what is the point of being interested in someone like Ronnie? You've just witnessed him. You'd be the third girl that he'd have jumped to. And is this man worth all that? Like, I don't see what they're seeing at all in any capacity. He has a bad personality too. Like, it's not, I don't get it. He's just the worst. Kieran makes some type of side comment during this drinking game, I think to Io, because he pulled some dare that was like, select the two Islanders that you would want to have a threesome with and you have to kiss the both of them. And he makes some side comment about how he would have selected Grace for one of his kisses if he wasn't going to do the cop-out choice by kissing Nicole and Harriet. And that was lame. That was really lame. Do I have high expectations for the 21-year-old on Love Island? No. No, I do not. Harriet kisses Jess for which Islander is the most untrustworthy, which is lame because Harriet, Jess is not your enemy. You're both victims of the same fucking loser man. If only you would see what a fucking loser he is. And then Joey has to choose to have a three-way kiss, and you'd think that he would choose Samantha for at least one of them, but no. Joey chooses to have a three-way kiss with both of the new girl Islanders, and then Grace also has to kiss someone for one of her dares, and she of course chooses Joey. So the aftermath of this whole thing is basically that Samantha wants nothing to do with Joey and all of this, and she's like wanting to sleep in the garden, and then Joey gets pissed at that because he's like, why are you out here? You keep saying that you're not bothered by all this, but clearly you are. And she's like, you guys should rekindle your little holiday romance from Ibiza. Like, have fun. I don't want to be the third party. And was she being a little passive aggressive during this whole thing? Yes. Was she wrong? No. At first, it almost seemed like it was like she was acting, you know, on information she didn't have, where she was like assuming that Joey was gonna hop ship completely and rekindle. And she's like, I don't want to be a part of a triangle. She was like anticipating the triangle before the triangle really happened. But to be honest, she was right. So I think she just knew. I think she's seeing things that we're not seeing as the audience. And I'm team Samantha 100% because of how things play out here. Then this is a new addition to the show. They've never done this before, to my memory. Saucy sleepovers. Each of the new Islanders gets to pick someone to take with them for a night away. Grace picks Joey, Tiffany picks Ronnie, and Will picks Uma. And pretty much the second they get to this new villa, Joey is 100% over Samantha, speaking to Grace as if Samantha's not even in the picture, and he's like already working on phasing her out, wanting to focus on Grace completely. It was an immediate switch. Samantha's gut was 100% right in thinking that Joey was just waiting for someone better to come along. And he literally reacted to her on the daybed as if she was crazy for thinking that. And she was not crazy. There was no part of her that was crazy. She was spot fucking on. And while they're at this new villa, Joey and Grace are just openly making out, and so is Ronnie and Tiffany. While all of this is going on and they're having their like messy, saucy sleepover away at the other villa, Mimi tells Kieran back at the main villa that she heard about what he said about Grace during the challenge, about him wanting to kiss Grace if he was going to be honest. And Mimi was basically like, you really need to tell Nicole before Nicole finds out from someone else. It's going to be better coming from you than it would be coming from, you know, someone overhearing it. So you better squash that before it gets any bigger. I don't think it really turns into much, but I think it's worth noting because
Kieran and Nicole are starting to have more little tiffs like these where he's saying something on the sly, she gets really upset by it, and then he's getting really flustered with her reactions to him. We'll loop back to that a little bit later in the week. So they come back from the saucy sleepovers, and Joey like doesn't even speak to Samantha at all, pretty much. He's very cold to her upon returning home, and Samantha's obviously really fucking upset and is very emotional. She's got hurt fucking feelings. And Joey, I don't remember who she was talking to, for who Joey was talking to with this, but he said, "I wouldn't have done any of this to her," and was complaining about Samantha's emotional reaction to his tomfoolery. Basically saying, I wouldn't have done any of this to her in relation to her sleeping on the daybed the night before and icing him out when he's very clearly jumping to Grace, telling Grace in the other villa that he's like all in on her and he didn't really see anything happening with Samantha. But then to other people and to Samantha, he's like trying to play the victim and acting like Samantha iced him out and gave him no other option, which is actively not what happened. Fuck you. And then he accuses Samantha of not communicating, which he deserves to be lobotomized for, because if anyone's not communicating, it's you. It's you, my son. You are the one that just fucking made out with Grace in another villa, that jumped literally the second she was back in the villa. And when you were called out, when Samantha got the vibe immediately that you wanted to focus on rekindling with Grace, you could have just said, "You know what, you're right, I do want that." Instead, you lied to her and said that she was crazy, pretty much, and got mad at her for sleeping on the daybed when she was completely right the whole fucking time. So fuck you. Then literally, same day that they get back from the saucy sleepovers, Joey and fucking Grace are making out on the daybeds. And Nicole and Jess watch this happen and basically immediately tell Samantha, because it's so disrespectful to be doing that literally the same day, 24 fucking hours after Grace has arrived in the villa. You're doing all of that after gaslighting the shit out of Samantha and telling her that she was the one that was shutting it off, and that like it was Samantha that was shutting him down, when meanwhile he's saying to Grace that he's not all that into Samantha and making out with her. Now, in front of everyone in the villa, oh my God, he is a demon too. We've got two demons. Demon hours in this villa, Joey and fucking Ronnie, you two are evil. Oh my God. Then word gets around to Harriet somehow that Ronnie said that he would couple up with Tiffany if a recoupling were to happen right now. Harriet calls him out for that, and he really has nothing much to say. And what did you know? A recoupling does happen. And obviously the New Islanders get to pick first, so we don't know exactly who Ronnie would pick, but Ronnie and Tiffany do end up recoupling because Tiffany picks him, Grace picks Joey, Will picks Uma, and then we've got Mimi and Io, Nicole and Kieran, Sean and Harriet, Omar and Jess, and Samantha is dumped from the villa. So it was very quick that she was then ousted after this whole thing went down. And then there's a shot at the end of that episode of Joey sitting alone just around the fire pit fucking sulking. Like, shut up. Shut up. And he's acting all sad about it. I'm like, what are you? You're a professional actor, my guy. What's going on? What, can we channel the same energy you had in the fucking pool the day before when you're telling Grace that you didn't care about Samantha at all, and now you're sulking and being like, "I just lost something." Shut up. Shut up. I hate him. Ronnie wakes up the next morning. Ronnie, demon number one over here, wakes up the next morning and goes to talk to Harriet and is making jokes about how Sean stole his girl. And basically tells Harriet that he's still deciding whether he wants her or Tiffany. And the worst part is that Harriet's going to eat it up. Harriet's going to believe this somehow. Harriet and Tiffany end up swapping stories. And Harriet tells her this. And then when Tiffany confronts Ronnie about what he says to Harriet, Ronnie, I cannot make this up, says, "Everyone's against me being nice these days."
This man has a PhD in demonology. I can't stress this enough. What the fuck? What the fuck? Everyone's against me being nice these days. In response to Tiffany calling him out for telling Harriet that he's still into her and still she's still in the running. And then he's like, oh, what? I can't be nice? What? Then, if you would believe it, Ronnie ends things with Harriet after Joey and Grace are encouraging him to. After he just told Harriet she was still in the running. So this was a quick high and quick low. But you know what? I could have predicted this. Ronnie's the worst. He's the worst. There's new Islanders. One girl and one boy, and they're both picking three people to date. We've got Matilda picks Omar, Sean, and Will. They're doing like the starter main dessert thing. And then Connor, who picks Grace, Nicole, and Mimi. Matilda knows Ronnie, not because she used to date him, but because she used to date one of his friends. So Matilda has some outside knowledge of how Ronnie is in the real world. Now, I was shocked at my personal development here, the shift that I had. Because as you guys know, I have said that I thought that Sean was the most boring person in the villa and that he needed to be kicked out sooner rather than later. My prediction was that he was going to be the first one to go. But I'll be honest, I'm kind of rooting for Sean here with Matilda. He's very boring. Yes, he is. But at the very least, he's been polite, which is more than most of them in the villa can say, even though I was preying on his downfall because he's boring. But that's just like Love Island rules. Like, I always prey on the downfall of the annoying people. Not annoying. Sorry, boring. He's not annoying. I actually celebrate the rising of the annoying people on Love Island because it's reality TV. I'm excited by messiness. Sean is quite boring, but I actually found myself starting to root for him because he's a little awkward and a little like he doesn't have any charisma whatsoever. That man is actually like a black hole of like smoothness of any kind. He's very awkward and very weird. However, it works for him. And I think it is working on Matilda. So we'll see how that develops. Then we've got the suck and blow game, which the only real highlight from this game is that Io has to snog the person who he has the most sexual chemistry with outside of his partner, and he picks Uma, unexplainably. She was probably the worst person that you could have picked in this whole villa. You could have made out with almost anyone else and had it been better than choosing to make out with Uma, the one girl that you've had conflict with Mimi within your relationship that you actually were. It's like some of these men, it's like they take it so literally and they're like, well, she naturally would be the most honest answer because she and I also had some type of connection. But it's like you are in a relationship. You are with someone right now that you know that's going to really upset them more than if you made out with like literally any other person. It ends up getting resolved. Mimi and him work through it. But I can't help but feel like Mimi is being too forgiving of the ways that Io is acting. He's a little, something's not right there with me. It's not sitting right. Then after the suck and blow challenge, because Ronnie did like a cop out kiss during the suck and blow challenge where he does like a peck with Matilda and Jess for women he would want to share a bed with other than his partner. And so the girls are sat around talking smack about Ronnie loudly after the challenge, calling him an actor. And Ronnie's sitting across the yard on the day beds with Tiffany and he can hear all of it. And he gets really mad about the actor comment in particular. And he tries to call them out. And backs down pretty quickly, actually. And I actually don't care if they're rude to him because he deserves to be rude too. So there's like a little fight that happens there. Ronnie's being rude as hell and then like storms off to the house. and starts talking shit about Harriet to the guys, being like, she's just mad because I've got the real prize now. Talking about Tiffany. I don't know. Ugh, so exhausting. Then Sean pulls Matilda to the hideaway and all the girls are like, oh no, like we love Sean, but he's coming on too strong. Like, I don't know what to do. And I agree that he's a little bit awkward. And I think in a lot of scenarios, this wouldn't work out for him and it would be seen as him coming on too strong. But to be honest, I think Matilda is really charmed by his awkwardness. So it's working for him because she is into that. And it seems like very much a situation of like, you can't say the wrong thing to the right person. I know, I hate it. I hate that I kind of like Sean, but he is such a dork. And he's very like, everything he says and does, I find myself like, oh. Like, it's a little hard to watch sometimes because he's just so awkward. But she is so charmed by him and I love that. And so I am kind of rooting for them right now. He tries to kiss Matilda in the hideaway and she's like, no, it's too early. But she's not turned off by this. If anything, she really likes his boldness and his forwardness. She's just like also setting a boundary for herself. So it didn't change anything within their dynamic. I think it's sweet that she is charmed by his like awkwardness and his innocence in a way. This might be my lover girl of the season. Matilda, I think I like her. And I think I like her and Sean right now. Things change. Who knows? We still haven't reached fucking Casa Amor, so don't hold me to this. But I'm kind of liking Matilda and Sean right now. Then, oh, this is fucking rich. Tiffany says that she is not 100% on Ronnie, which is so good. It's fucking rich. Tiffany's like, there's something missing with Ronnie. Tiffany, Ronnie's third girl, the girl that Ronnie has left it all for, that he was like, I'm a changed man for. This is his karma, and I love it so much. So Tiffany tells Ronnie this, and he's basically like, well, that's it, I guess. Fuck me. And then Maya Jama returns. Maya's here, and the public has been voting for their favorite couples. The fewest voted couples are Grace and Joey, Ronnie and Tiffany, Uma and Will, and Omar and Jess. The saved Islanders have to pick one boy and one girl to dump from the villa. I think that they should pick Ronnie and Tiffany. But we knew that wasn't going to happen. And they ended up dumping Tiffany and Omar. Kieran gets pissed at Sean. And they're bickering about this during the deliberations for who to get rid of. And then after the elimination has already happened, Kieran is pissed because Sean said very bluntly that he wanted to dump Omar so that Omar wouldn't be in the way of him and Matilda, because Omar was also going for Matilda. But to be honest, I don't think Omar ever really stood a chance there. And Sean was sort of irritated back at Kieran and was like, let's be honest, if you were me, you would have done it too. But Kieran's like, that's wrong to dump him just to like get yourself ahead. It's like, Kieran, since when are you the, you know, pinnacle of moral righteousness here? You're on fucking Love Island. What are we doing? Sean wants to eliminate him so he has a better chance with Matilda. Listen, we're in a fucking fake reality TV situation right now. Just let it happen. It's not that big of a deal. Holy shit, Karen. Get a grip. And I could have seen this coming. I wish that this didn't happen. But now that Tiffany is gone and Ronnie is still here, both Harriet and Jess are considering opening the door again with Ronnie. Are y'all on fucking drugs? Have you forgotten everything you've said about this man up until this point? I will never understand this. Once I start talking shit about a man, that means the door is closed. Once I start talking smack, I mean smack, shitting. I don't mean like venting, expressing my grievances, expressing anger, when I start fucking defaming someone in the group chat, I will never go back to them, okay? Once you reach that point, to go back with the very person that you were fucking going in on, okay, obliterating their existence, if you go back to that person, what are we doing, girls? And both of them have talked so much shit on Ronnie at this point. What do you see in him? Knowing that all of the smack you talked, if you believe that all of that is true, which it is, he is a shitty person. What are we doing? Actually, what are we doing? I do not get it at all. So there's a recoupling that happens. Matilda and Connor pick first, and then the girls are picking. So Matilda ends up picking Sean. Connor picks Grace, which sets Joey off. He's fucking pissed. And then the other couples, we've got Uma and Will, Kieran and Nicole, Harriet and Ronnie, Io and Mimi, and Jess and Joey. So then Harriet and Ronnie get sent on a first date. I'm fucking embarrassed for her right now. I'm deeply embarrassed for you, Harriet. So Harriet and Ronnie are like fully rekindled and are going back into it. Jess and Ronnie end up having a chat, and Ronnie's like, well, it probably would have gone different for the two of us if you didn't couple up with Sean when you did, and I'm just like not interested anymore. Is it surprising to me that Ronnie got turned off by a woman standing up for herself to him? No. No, it's not. Because Jess is the only one that, like, really did it. Like, she stood up for herself to him and, like, cut him off. Harriet, like, did the toxic back and forth thing with him. She'd, like, fought with him. And it wasn't like Harriet ever really stood up for herself. She would, like, go at it with him. But Jess was the only one that was like, and you're done. And coupled up with someone else and, like, actually showed him the consequences to his behavior, to his choices. I'm a little put off by her now going back to him, trying to be like, well, maybe we could. No, you couldn't. Why did we do that? Anyways, then Jess goes and tells the girls this conversation that she had with him, and Harriet gets angry, being like, mad that Jess brought this up and ruined her happy day with Ronnie. But I'm like, Harriet, I need you to have your feet planted firmly in reality here. Jess did not ruin your happy day. Ronnie's about to ruin every happy day you'll ever have if you stay with him. Oh my God. Ronnie is not the victim here. And these girls are fucking insane for continuing to go after him. I can't deal with it. Then Sean and Matilda end up kissing on the terrace. Huge, huge moves for my boy Sean. Nicole and Kieran are, again, continuing to get in their small little tiffs. Nicole is really bothered that Kieran's body count is over 120, being that he's only 21 years old. Which... I am notoriously not someone that thinks body count matters. However, I think there's something to be said about having had sex with so many people at such a young age. I'm more like, that to me makes me sad more than anything else. Like, hearing that someone that's 21 could have had sex with 120 different people at that age, that more just makes me feel like they're a victim to some larger problem, not necessarily making me judge them in any way. But Nicole is really bothered that Kieran's body count is that high. We'll see if they can get past it. Then we've got the heart rate challenge. The heart rate challenge is here. And here's the recap. Let's get to the point here. Whose heart rate was raised the most by who? Io's heart rate was raised the most by Mimi. Ding, ding, ding. Connor's heart rate was raised the most by Matilda. Will's heart rate was raised the most by Uma. Ding, ding, ding. Sean's heart rate was raised the most by Jess. Joey's heart rate was raised the most by Nicole. Ronnie's heart rate was raised the most by Jess. And they're doing a little, like, flirty thing at the fire pit where, like, during the heart rate challenge, Jess whispers in Ronnie's ear, you fucking wish. And then he ends up whispering it back to her. And then around the fire pit, when they're reading out the heart rates, they're like doing the you fucking wish thing back and forth to each other across the fire pit. And I'm like, this is a little flirty. Anyone else picking up on this? And then Kieran's Highway was raised the most by Grace, which is obviously going to start some problems given what we already know Kieran said about Grace when she first came in during the Dare Challenge. Then the girls' heart rates. Harriet's heart rate was raised the most by Ronnie. Matilda's was raised the most by Sean. Uma's by Will. Mimi by Connor. Nicole by Kieran. Jess by Ronnie. And Grace by Io. And then a text comes in after all this information is read out that says, your heart rates weren't the only ones raised tonight. Jess and Joey, Trey and Jesse are waiting to date you. Please head out of the villa. And they start heading out to go on those dates. And that's where I'm going to stop us. That was the end of Tuesday's episode this week. So I'm officially all caught up. Next week, we'll start on Wednesday's episode. And I'm thinking next week is Casa Amor. Which is crazy, right? We're at week 5. We're about to be. So I'm thinking Casa Amor hours are about to hit us. And I am so fucking excited. I know a lot of people have been like not that into this season. Or I don't know, just not liking this season so far. Because everyone sucks. Which everyone does suck this season. But I have hopes for Matilda and Sean to sort of redeem us on that front. And to be honest, I live for the drama. So I actually don't need to like anybody on Love Island. I actually very rarely do. Happy to be back in Brooklyn. Happy to be back in my routine, settling in. So excited to get my ass to Kinds of Kindness, which starts in an hour. So I've got to go literally right fucking now. Love you so much. Thank you so much for listening. And I will see you in next week's episode. Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.